History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Bart Winkler Show podcast.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Bart Winkler. Welcome to the Bart Winkler Show. Carlos Ortiz alongside on this Thursday night. You know what Thursdays mean around here, folks. Bartometer. Yes, our flagship segment. I have created a machine. Artificial intelligence. And it helps us settle debates and go over topics. Tonight, I'm going to have it do a mock draft for the first 8 spots in the draft. So we're going to be talking some NFL draft tonight, as the NFL draft is in 2 weeks. Green Bay, Wisconsin. The stage is being assembled. Now, where the stage is right outside of Lambeau in, like, the parking lot. And across the street from Lambeau Field are homes. And a lot of these homes have a backyard view of Lambeau Field. And some of the homes are really spectacular homes. And the people that live there rent it out for game days, little Airbnb situation, certainly going to rent it out for the NFL draft. There was one lady that the local news covered recently where she was trying to get $10,000 a night with a 5-night minimum for her home, which, not to judge anyone's dwelling or place of residence, but that price for her home compared to some lower prices for other homes, she was clearly shooting for the stars, which kudos to her for trying. But yeah, there's homes all around Lambeau, and I've gone to plenty of games where you park in somebody's lawn, you know, for $25, or the closer it is, the more it costs. And some of these homes are being rented out for parties because Lambeau Field is right there, and they may even be able to see the people on the stage of the draft. So that's what's going to be cool about this draft in a couple of weeks. We'll have coverage for you. It's just like they're taking this thing, which, you know, the Radio City Music Halls and some of these larger metro areas where they put it outdoors, they're basically doing this in a neighborhood. So it's going to be very interesting to see as the NFL tries to move the draft around, specifically to cities and locations that aren't going to get Super Bowls. I mean, as great as it would be to see a Super Bowl at Lambeau Field, the stadium is still mainly bleachers, and it would be very cold there. Just looking out at the forecast, the furthest I can get this week, next week, well, you know what? We may be in like the 50s for the NFL draft, which, like, 55 in Wisconsin this time of the year feels like 90 in Palm Beach. So it would be very nice if that was the case, and we'll continue to monitor that to see what kind of experience people heading to the draft are going to be in for. I think that anybody that is going, there's just going to be a lot of people in a lot of tight spaces with not a lot of ways to leave. There's about 3 highways that take you to Lambeau, and this is the NFL's great experiment, this draft in Green Bay coming up in a little bit. So 2 weeks away from that, Bartometer mock draft coming up in about an hour, and we'll go through the top 8 picks. Tennessee's got 1, Cleveland 2, Giants 3, Patriots 4, Jacksonville 5, Raiders, Jets, and Panthers round out the top 8. I think we know 3 guys that are going to be drafted in the top 4. Cam Ward should go to the Titans. Travis Hunter is not getting past 4. Neither is Abdul Carter. So the question becomes, Does Shedeur Sanders land himself in the top four? That's been the big one. The big talking point. When you open up a mock draft, that's where I first look. I control F. Sanders. I try to find where the author of a given draft thinks he's going to go. And it does seem like right now, because again, there's not much really to go over that's new, that's changed, that's different. It does seem like right now you have authors of these mock drafts tripping over themselves to try to see who can rank Shedeur Sanders the lowest. Will he go 9? Will he go 13? Will he go 22? You want to get a little brave and knock him out of the first round entirely. Some people getting a little excited and trying to do that. So it's going to be quite interesting to see where he goes. That, I think, will be sort of the most interesting aspect of the draft. Plus, who takes Travis Hunter? Who takes Abdul Carter? Who takes Shedeur Sanders? And a lot of that is going to depend on what happens at number 2. Cam Ward, quarterback, Miami, should be the first off the board to Tennessee. And then the Cleveland Browns get up there, and they will likely think a lot about Abdul Carter. Edge guy, you pair him across Myles Garrett, who you've been able to retain and extend. And suddenly, the Browns could be building a little bit of something on defense. So they got to figure out their offense. You know, they need help at wide receiver. They need help at running back. They need help at quarterback. They're going in right now with Kenny Pickett. But if you start to build up the defense, that becomes a different sort of direction for the team. Travis Hunter just may be too good of a prospect to pass up. Even if he was just a cornerback, but he can play wide receiver and he can play it well. So essentially, you're getting a 2 for the price of 1 here. Now, some teams may bring him in to say, all right, you're the cornerback. Forget about offense, you know, unless we want to get cute or vice versa. But Travis Hunter could be an option at 2. And the Browns do need a quarterback. So if Cam Ward goes, well, then decision's been made. You take Shedeur Sanders. But do the Browns want to take Shedeur Sanders? Do the Browns want to take a quarterback? And we've taken a couple of calls. There was one that stuck with me this week where the caller essentially questioned why would the Browns take a quarterback at number 2 to begin with when they've had such a bad history, especially since they respawned in Cleveland after moving to Baltimore. Why would they draft a quarterback when it never seems to work out? And so do you as an organization, even though these are different players and coaches and front office people than the ones that made many of these other decisions, do you look and say, well, we just can't do it? No matter who we take, it doesn't work here for whatever reason. So we're going to pivot and find a quarterback a different way. We'll take Travis Hunter and then trade for Kirk Cousins. Not that the Browns have had a lot of success trading or going the free agent route anyway. So let's look at that lack of success. And as I go through this, try to think, should they take Shedeur Sanders? Is he going to be another one of these guys? Or do you not look at it that way? Because the Chicago Bears, when they took Caleb Williams, they've had a history of missing at quarterbacks. Rex Grossman, Mitch Trubisky, just of recent. See, and you've had like no 4,000-yard quarterback ever in that organization's history. Who's the best quarterback of all time? I mean, the debate is Sid Luckman and Jay Cutler for the Bears. So should they not have taken Caleb Williams? Or are they just doomed to have taken the wrong one? Jaden Daniels had a really good year. We're way too early for that. Just like I think it's too early to say C.J. Stroud is a better pro than Bryce Young. So far he has been. But I think it's too early for that. I think it's too early to say Anthony Richardson's a bust. The Colts aren't hesitating. They're bringing in Daniel Jones. But when you're forced to make a decision, do you make a decision facing the future? That's what you should do. But how much does the past affect the decision you're making now? Even in cases where the past, you had nothing to do with that. Andrew Berry and Stefanski and, you know, even Jimmy Haslam. Some of these guys didn't have anything to do with what happened in the past history of the Cleveland Browns. 1999, they came back from the dead. They took Tim Couch, number one overall. They could have taken Donovan McNabb at number two. It's where he went number two. But then Akili Smith went number three. So did they take the wrong guy, or did Tim Couch just never have an opportunity to succeed because that's what kind of organization the Cleveland Browns are? Tim Couch didn't work. They drafted in 2000 Spurgeon Winn. That was a six-round pick, and he got some starts, but he never became really anything. Doug Peterson was a quarterback for them a little bit. Tim Couch then split. Remember Kelly Holcomb? Kelly Holcomb had some starts with the Browns 2002, 2003. Jeff Garcia, they tried to make work. Luke McCown, who was a fourth-round pick for them in 2004. Trent Dilfer gets a stint there. Charlie Fry, they draft round three, pick number 67 in 2005. But these guys, outside of Tim Couch, these are some later round picks. All right, so the Browns can't figure out a quarterback. You've gone from Tim Couch didn't work, Jeff Garcia, Kelly Holcomb, Trent Dilfer, Derek Anderson. Remember Derek Anderson? In 2007, they take Brady Quinn. Derek Anderson gets a bunch of the starts. Brady Quinn gets three starts in 2008, nine starts in 2009, splitting with Anderson. And then that's a bust. Colt McCoy had a nice college career. They take him in 2010 in round three. He's their main starter for two seasons. That doesn't work out. 2010, Brandon Whedon at pick number 22. Remember, Brandon Whedon was like 27 when he was drafted. Started for a year and then split with Jason Campbell and Brian Hoyer. Then the Browns had 22 again. In 2014, and they took a real wild card. A wild card that basically everyone said, that's not going to work. Johnny Manziel. Oh, I love Johnny Manziel. I loved him coming out of college. I thought he really could have been something. Now, Johnny Manziel, when he's on these different podcasts and different interviews, I mean, he was never going to succeed. The football was not a priority for him. He was never going to succeed. But is that the Browns' fault for taking him because they're in a bad organization? Is it Johnny Manziel's fault? Should that decision 10 years ago have any sort of an impact on what happens now? Because many Browns fans would tell you they don't want to draft a quarterback simply for these reasons I go through. Cody Kessler drafted in 2016, round three. DeShone Kizer in 2017, round two. And then for the first time since 1999, not only are they drafting in round one, but they are drafting with pick number one in 2018. And this is a year where there were plenty of quarterbacks to be taken, and there was a lot of good discussion about who should go number one. Quarterbacks that went in the first round included Lamar Jackson, pick number 32. Buffalo trading back in to get the quarterback out of Louisville. A little higher than that, you saw Josh Rosen at 10. You saw Josh Allen at 7. You saw Sam Darnold at 3. Rosen's career has flamed out. Darnold was dead until he came back to life. Josh Allen is an MVP, as is Lamar Jackson. Would the Browns have done better with any of those guys? Or were they set up to fail no matter who they took? And Baker, Baker was good. I think there's a lot of Browns fans that if they could revise history, they would wish they never traded Baker Mayfield. They would wish that Baker Mayfield was still their quarterback to this day. Baker won them a playoff game, something that they don't really do. And if it wasn't making mistakes in the draft, it was making mistakes with trades. Deshaun Watson, who put out an Instagram today, like, don't forget about me. It was an Instagram, him working out in Browns gear. Said in the Instagram, everyone's doubting me. Everyone don't believe in me. Everyone don't think I can get back to where I was. But I know and I believe the work that I put in, what I believe in myself, the peace that I've been channeling these last couple of months, I know I'm going to be way better than before. Should we hang on to some Deshaun Watson stock? Is the future of the Cleveland Browns quarterback position currently with them? I think we've all written Deshaun off. I think we probably should have written Deshaun off. Is anybody hanging on to anything? The Browns, if they had traded for Deshaun Watson before he was suspended and didn't play for a year in Houston, we would have said brilliant move. Deshaun was rivaling Patrick Mahomes for best quarterback in the league. There was a time where Deshaun, you would trade a bunch of picks for him. You would give him a guaranteed contract. But the Browns did it after that and after nobody else would, essentially negotiating against themselves. So all these bad decisions that they've made, all these bad draft picks that they've made, or just draft picks that didn't work out, because we never really get to know the answer. When a quarterback is drafted and it doesn't work, we never truly know, was the quarterback at fault? Was the team at fault? Was it in a bad situation? You never really can know. But if you're an organization that has repeatedly screwed up at quarterback, and then the guy you take, Baker's below Lamar and he's below Josh Allen, but he's a serviceable above that quarterback, and you said he was no good because you want Deshaun, and that's blown up in your face. The owner finally admitting it, Jimmy Haslam. So when you get to this point where you have the number two pick, where you still need a quarterback, do you look at the card and say, we're going to take one and this time we're going to get it right? Or can you simply not get yourself to do it because of all the mistakes laid out for you right here? And that's a decision that the Cleveland Browns have to make at number two. And that's going to be a decision that dictates the entirety of this whole draft. Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, Shedeur Sanders, possibly a trade, but I don't think you can be at that spot and trade any lower than four. I mean, if you have the number two pick in this draft and don't come away with a quarterback, Hunter, or Abdul Carter, that's a bigger malpractice than anything they've done in the previous 25 years. So we'll see how things play out for Cleveland. The Bartometer will give its impact in about 40 minutes. But certainly, I think the biggest question mark and where it's going to get interesting early is with what the Browns do at number two. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Sometimes there are situations where we just think it's just never going to happen. No matter how hard someone tries, it's just never going to happen. I think we saw that again at Augusta today. We'll have details on that. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. This is the Bart Winkler Show.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Bart Winkler Show podcast.
It is the Bart Winkler Show. I am Bart Winkler, Carlos Ortiz alongside Marco Belletti on the updates tonight, with one coming up shortly. Bulletin Blitz this hour, leading right into the Bartometer for hour number two. Thursday at Augusta, the Masters have completed one round. A little bit of a threat of rain on Friday. We'll see what things look like. A lot of the greens playing fast, which if you're a guy like Rory McIlroy, that's what you're thinking of tonight. Rory had a really nice round. He was 4 under when he got to the 15th. And he chips in a shot. It's a par 5. And the ball goes like close to the hole. And then it keeps going. And then it keeps going. And then it keeps going. And then it goes into the water. He had a double bogey on 15. Ended up getting a double bogey on 17. So golf's very hard. You grind and grind and grind and try to chip and chip and chip. Chip off that score. Get under par where you can. 4 under coming into the 15th. And he played the final 4 holes, 4 over with 2 double bogeys to finish even par 72. So he's in a tie for 27th. The leader right now is Justin Rose. 7 under, a 3-stroke lead. Then it's Corey Connors, Scottie Scheffler, Ludvig Åberg at 4 under, the three of them. Tyrell Hatton and Bryson DeChambeau at 3 under. So somebody from LIV Golf popping up there, which I'll get more into in a second. But Rory, I think the storyline that would really turn Masters Sunday into something that we haven't seen since Tiger is Rory. If Rory can win a Masters. Now, Scottie Scheffler has become a draw based on his pure talent. I mean, we don't see him out there yucking it up on talk shows too much or anything like that, but sometimes you're just so dominant that we want to watch you. Kind of like Shohei Ohtani. We never know what he's saying, but we love to watch him play. Rory's been a guy that we've always been enamored with, and he came in and was one of these guys like Justin Thomas did it, Jordan Spieth did it, Rory McIlroy did it, where they come in, win a bunch of majors, and then they don't win majors for a while. In 2011, Rory won the U.S. Open. In 2012, he won the PGA. In 2014, he won the British and the PGA. That was 12 years ago. Now at age 35, the closest he's gotten to a major win was the Masters in 2022. He took second. So it's been the one Masters, or the one major, I should say, that he hasn't been able to win, and he has not won a major since 2014. But he's also playing better golf than anybody this year. He's playing some really good golf. But you get to day one at the Masters, and Rory finishes even, and then 65-year-old Fred Couples finishes 1 under. Now, Fred Couples was the talk of Augusta today. He holed out from 191 yards on 14 for an eagle. He was 1 under par. His first round ever under par at the Masters was in 1983. 42 years apart. Broke a record for longest gap between first round under par and last round under par. The second oldest player to break par ever at Augusta. So crazy moment there. A lot of people in the golf world very happy for him. But Rory's somebody that everybody seems to root for Rory. And he's been the most outspoken guy. He's backed off a little bit, but he was very much team PGA. Outside of Tiger, he would have been the guy that if he left, you would have said like, okay, now it's over. And that's a big problem with golf. And that it sucks that it happened. So golf, and it may not be for everybody, I understand that. I think the majors do draw more people in, especially as you get into the weekend. And there's something about Masters and the Azaleas and spring. And the best is when it falls on Easter and then you're watching with your family. That's really cool. But golf saw a renaissance, or really like its best time ever with Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods was able to dominate and draw people in from all over the place. And he was the draw every week. If Tiger was in on a Sunday competing for a tournament or for a major, the networks were very happy to have that. As he was leaving, not leaving, but, and I don't even want to say winding down, but it's clear that Tiger is now, his career is not over, but it's not ever going to be what it was. And it was so cool to see him win a Masters again a couple of years ago, but it's not ever going to be what it was. And when Tiger was starting what we can now look back at and say a decline, there were a bunch of guys coming into golf that I'd mentioned beforehand with Spieth and Thomas and Rory, that it looked like all these guys that had been watching Tiger Woods, now they were going to continue to not only watch Tiger Woods play, but compete with him and beat him. And it was going to be like a nice passing of the torch, that they would be somewhat in good hands, that golf was going to be in a good spot. It wouldn't just be one guy, but it'd be all these other guys. And then LIV Golf came along. And tournaments like this, it's nice to see those guys back playing with the PGA guys. Like Bryson DeChambeau's there. He got an exemption because he won the U.S. Open in 2024, so he's eligible to play in the Masters through 2029. But he's doing the best of those guys. But there's a lot of other guys that are in this competition that are not doing well. Like Phil Mickelson, I think, is 3 over. Brooks Koepka. Where's Brooks? He's 2 over. John Rahm, 3 over. Dustin Johnson, 2 over. These are guys who you may have even forgotten about. All these guys that took the bag with LIV Golf. And we know, like, why LIV Golf exists. Saudi Arabia created it to try to break their way into the sports world. And sports washing is the term we use. And for people to go and play for them, they needed to get a lot of money, and the money became so substantial that it's almost like impossible to turn down. Even if you want to speak out about them morally for things that have happened with current or previous regimes, Ted DiBiase is correct when he says everybody's got a price. But what's unfortunate for, you know, us, just like watching golf on the weekend, is that a lot of these guys went to LIV Golf and then their career just kind of like ended. Like, they went to LIV Golf. Who, nobody's watching LIV Golf. Now, it was on the CW for a few years. Fox has picked it up. There were like 400,000 people that watched the last round in Miami during the day on a Sunday. Okay, you flip around the channels, it's broadcast TV, you turn it on. That's still less than what the United Football League is getting, and everybody likes to pretend that that doesn't exist. So it's like, oh, the women's college final only got 9 million viewers. That's a 75% decrease from a year ago. Yeah. LIV Golf doesn't even get 750,000 viewers. So nobody's watching this. And when you see these guys again, like, the majors are really when you get to see what golf was like before LIV and what golf should be like. We should see Patrick Reed every week, Masters winner in 2018. We should see Dustin Johnson every week, Masters winner in the rescheduled COVID 2020. We should see John Rahm every week. winning in 2023. We see them in the tournament with the exemption, but they play and they're just like, it's like they're not even there, or it's like it's somebody cosplaying as them. We're not getting the versions of them we would have gotten had they never left for the money all those years ago. And what you do with your individual life, you know, I'm sure there's things that I've spoken out against. But once you keep adding zeros, it's like, okay, well, if I can take care of my family and my future, I mean, people are going to make fun of me for the rest of my life, but I also won't be working and I'll be on vacation every day by the time I'm 45. So also when I am working, I'm going to work like 3 days a week. I mean, if Live Radio said you can work 3 days a week, 2 weeks out of the year, and we're going to fly you all over the world to do it. And if you win or lose, or if your show's good or bad, it doesn't matter. I mean, we'd have a talk at the dinner table. We'd have a talk at the dinner table. And I think, you know, a lot of people would. But for all of us who don't exist in this fantasy world, where not only would being a golfer be like the coolest job ever, and then some other place comes over and says, you want to golf less for more money? We don't live in that world. We live in the world where we want to watch the best in the world when we get the chance to in our busy lives. And that product has been ruined, and it doesn't look like it's going to come together anytime soon. There's always these talk of mergers, and it's just not happening. So the majors are an opportunity to see what golf looked like and could look like again someday, but also a reminder, it may not look like that and many careers in terms of the greatness. Like, some of these guys could still win events again, but Dustin Johnson and Patrick Reed and John Rahm, they're not going to be the golfers that they would have been had they stayed consistently week in and week out with the PGA. Your leader right now, going into Friday, again, Justin Rose. 3-stroke lead. We'll hear from him coming up. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Right now, an update from Marco Belletti.
The biggest moments in the games.
Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
The biggest voices in sports.
They crowned their ass, but they are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
The heartbreak.
Lynch in the backfield. Russell looks, throws inside. Oh, my God! It's picked off at the goal line! It's picked off by Gus Butler. Intended for Lockett at the goal line. Oh, my word.
The celebrations.
Driving forward, diving to the goal line. A touchdown and a title for the Patriots.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
They have completed the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history.
Look at Brady. One more ring.
It's the audio of the day. It's the Bulletin Blitz.
Damn straight, it's the Bulletin Blitz on the Bart Winkler Show, only on the Infinity Sports Network, SiriusXM Channel 375, or wherever you are on the free Odyssey app. Search Bart Winkler and boom, all my hard-working podcasts and stuff is right there for you, including this very segment. It is Thursday, April 10th, 2025. April usually comes after March, and that's what I said last night, which is also on the podcast. Boomy. The best thing about today, Bart, was the start of the Masters. If you're into that kind of thing, not me. If they play the Masters in my backyard, I will call the police for trespassing. But here is Justin Rose. He is on top of the leaderboard, and he's very pleased with the way that he's performing.
The only blemish on 18, but there's no point dwelling on that. I think it was a really good day's golf on a golf course that was a stern test. I think if you look at the overall leaderboard, not many low scores out there, so you had to hit a lot of quality shots and delighted with the way I played.
It was 7-under, which is quite an anomaly. A lot of guys were even today. Most of the field was either even, 1-over, or 1-under. A couple of guys at 2-under, 4 guys to be exact. A couple of guys at 3-under. a couple of guys to be exact, and then three guys at 4 under. He's got a 3-stroke lead, Justin Rose does. So he came off firing hot, birdie on each of the first three holes, did really well at the turn. His one bogey, as you mentioned, at 18, but I mean, if you're, that's a pretty decent start. Now, 18 of the last 20 Masters after day one, the winner has been in the top 10. So if you look at it right now, if you don't have a 2-under or better, you ain't winning this thing based on historical trends. So we'll see how things play out, but should be an interesting tournament. I did watch some of it on ESPN Plus because the coverage on cable doesn't... They do like Sports Center at the Masters and then like a hybrid, like we're kind of able to show you, and then it's 4 hours of coverage and then they replay it at night. I don't know. The exclusivity makes it seem like it's more prestigious, but it's already prestigious. Just show us the whole tournament on normal television and don't be so stupid and weird about it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, you're done. Okay, cool. We talked about this ad nauseum yesterday, but it bears just getting the audio out there because you quoted Jason Kidd. We didn't actually have the sound until now, where Jason Kidd talked about Luka's return to Dallas, and he had a very, I would say, unfavorable on their end analogy for the Luka trade going to Los Angeles.
This is a business. It happens, right? Trades happen. This won't be the last trade. Some are comparing it to Babe Ruth, which is kind of cool. But like when you look at just the business of sports, change happens. But when change happens, it's the ones who can carry on. Those are the special people. And so there's hope. There's still hope.
You know, I'm pretty proud of this show. You should listen to it sometimes. I played that sound yesterday.
I wasn't listening. I 1,000,000% was doing something yesterday.
Oh, yeah? Would you care to share?
I was either screening calls or podcasting or being bothered by Nick Theodoro, who works here at the network, or screening calls, like I said the first time, because I forgot that I said it in the first place.
Yeah. I only bring it up because you made such a production about how we did not play the audio.
I remember playing something else from Jason Kidd. So that's, I forgot that you also play audio. I didn't play this cut.
Am I the only one that plays audio around
yes.
here as a host?
Yes.
That's which is pretty baller of me.
Yeah, which is cool because, you know, you get a little responsibility on driving the spaceship, but also I don't keep accounts of everything that gets aired here, which probably should, considering it's my job.
I am hoping to get into a new studio at some point, and that would probably not allow me to play audio.
Perfect.
Unless you want to spring $3,000 for me to buy one of these consoles.
No shot.
All right.
If anybody had $3,000 for me, that'd be great. I could use it. Speaking of change, which is one of the things that Jason Kidd had talked about, there was a change in Denver when they got rid of their head coach, Michael Malone. Nikola Jokic apparently got the heads up. And he says change is a constant in the NBA. This is courtesy of Altitude Sports.
Where I'm coming from, it's part of the sport. You know, people go and come and go. But, you know, it was a 10-year relationship with the coach. And we went through everything. We were bad. We were good. We won a championship. Definitely, we have some great memories. But, you know, it's part of the business, I would say.
Jokic sounded like he was trying to cover up a lie there. That was kind of weird. They did win against the Kings, and there's been plenty of video going around where he's basically like drawing up a play in a timeout. So it was a 4-game losing streak that finally had the Cronkies pull the trigger. Denver in their next game gets an 8-point win over Sacramento in a game that they needed. The NBA Western Conference standings are so extremely tight, and there's a massive game going on right now between the Grizzlies, who have the 6th seed, and the Timberwolves, who have the 8th. With a game separating them. The 7th seed is Golden State, who completely fumbled last night when they had a lead over the Spurs and then let former Warrior Harrison Barnes knock down a 3 at the buzzer in San Francisco. So just a devastating loss, which may have pushed them into the play-in to tournament, which you absolutely don't want to be in. There's just too much volatility there and no guarantees of a first-round series. So really interesting times in the West. That Grizzlies and Timberwolves game right now, it is at halftime. Memphis with a five-point lead. We'll break down things in the Western Conference when that one goes final.
All right, and last one here. We talked a little bit about NFL offseason storylines yet to be resolved. Well, one of those stories that are taking a new chapter in New York, that'd be Justin Fields. He's going to be the quarterback of the Jets. He talked a little bit about his previous experiences and that he'll be better for the benching, not necessarily getting the opportunity to start like, you know, any first-round draft pick before him would have.
I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason. So, you know, I was put in a place where I wasn't, you know, really never in a place of my entire life. So I think, you know, I tried to have a different perspective on it. Of course, you know, Russ has been in the league for a long time, so I learned a lot of great things from him and, you know, got to kind of learn a different perspective of things. And, you know, like I said, he's been in the league a long time. So just seeing how he works every day, seeing his routine and, you know, picking up things that I can implement into my routine, into my game.
Do you think everything happens for a reason?
No, honestly, I think sometimes things just happen.
Yeah, I think that a lot of things happen. I either think one of two things. I either think that our destiny is predetermined and that we're a simulation, or that we're just the recipients of random and chaotic events that lead us to where we get to. I probably think the former, or the latter, I should say. I always get those mixed up.
Yeah, ladders later.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just like Disney World is in Orlando because World is W-O-R-L, O-R-L being Orlando, Disneyland, L-A.
I actually never got that. That is very helpful.
Bartometer coming up next.
Thank you for listening to The Bart Winkler Show. Listen live Monday through Friday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.